This is Twa Teams One Street from the Evening Telegraph, the only podcast that's obsessed with Dundee and Dundee United as you are. This week, United have to be right up for Wraith. And top six race means Dee must make sure against Saints. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Twa Teams One Street. I'm Tom Duthie and podcasting alongside me in the flesh again is George Cran.
Hello.
Alan Temple.
Morning.
And Graham Finnan.
Hello everyone.
Suppose we should start this week by apologising for the absence of the podcast last week. It was recorded.
Oh, it was good stuff as well.
It was good stuff. Apart from the bit I forgot.
Another episode.
But I think we were hacked by the Russians. Or another foreign power. Other foreign powers are available. No, apparently.
Maybe it was another podcast.
They can't handle your truth, Tam, if you've been shut down.
That's a word I've never heard corrected to my name before. Truth. But hopefully this week the recording will last till their time. And don't forget, as they keep asking me, but I forget, you can also watch us on YouTube.
Whee! If this week's is released, that is.
You can watch a blank screen on YouTube, come what may. And hopefully you'll be able to listen as well. Anyway, down to business, chaps. And the business this weekend, sorry my fellow Dundee fans, for me it's all at Tannadice when United meet Wraith Rovers.
Yeah, United Rovers, the final chapter, and the biggest of the quartet by some distance. It's a huge game, only made bigger by yet more drop points at the weekend for Dundee United. And after two defeats and a draw against Wraith Rovers this season, albeit every game has been very, very tight, and United were probably marginally the better team in the last match at Starks Park, that all counts for nothing. They need to beat their biggest rivals and are now in such a position that unless they win the match, then the title, with a handful of games left, will be in Wraith Rovers' hands, which is a prospect that isn't worth thinking about if you're a Dundee United fan.
You
and one that's
thought about earlier in the season.
You've got everyone panicking now, I've got to
say. Well,
but
that's,
you're absolutely spot on, yeah.
That's the reality of the situation. I mean, I don't think I've even expressed an opinion at this point. That is just the facts. And
but facts can be scary, you know.
And in terms of the opinion of the matter, it's now time for United to show us the team that they were for periods in the first half of the season that they haven't been in 2024. It's 6 wins from 13 games is not good enough for this calendar year, and they're wobbling and stumbling towards the title, but there is still enough time to build some momentum and to get over the line. But they need to show gumption and determination and tempo and a bit of anger, a bit of frustration, you know, properly go for this, because not only are Wraith Rovers still on their tail, not only are Wraith Rovers threatening to win this league, but Wraith Rovers have been ripping the pee all season in terms of their interactions with Dundee United to an extent. So if this isn't a fired up, attacking, determined United team on Saturday, then I don't know what will ever be.
Aye, it's a big game. It strikes me, Bear, the one thing in Jim Goodwin's favour this week is his team talk. He can actually, with justification, say to his players, play like you did at Starks Park last time you met them, and you should win, because it was a game that was there for them to win. But they've got to, A, play like that, and B, when they create opportunities, take them.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it'll be an easy team talk for Jim Goodwin. I think it'll be a more difficult team selection after last week's performance, Tom, against Inverness. And I've got to must admit, if I were a Dundee United fan, I'd be starting to get a wee bit worried after last week's show against Inverness. But I saw the game, we've spoken in the past about how United, they have been a bit laboured at Tannadice, but they've always tried to play a bit of football and get down the sides. What I saw last week was a game where they basically, certainly in the second half, they reverted to launching long balls in the Inverness box and hoping to win second balls. Now, that nearly worked a couple of times for goals, but if you're going down that route for your last half a dozen games or so, I think they all start to become pretty much in the melting pot about how things are going to drop. I spoke last week about a couple of things about, a couple of weeks ago, about Glenn Middleton, how important he was for Dundee United. And I think, you know, last week must have surely been his worst game in a Tangerine jersey, right from his first touch. I think it was a free kick which he overhit. He couldn't either. He was either overhitting passes or he was you know, hitting the first man with free kicks. And United just struggled. And United need Glenn Middleton performing. And that's a real concern for me. You know, they need him performing at his best to create things. And it just didn't work. And I shouldn't pin the blame solely on Glenn Middleton.
I was going to challenge you slightly because he didn't have his best game. But like you say, they were pumping the ball down.
Yeah.
Give him the ball.
Yeah.
Give the laddie the ball.
I think that's right. And it might just be one of those games where nothing was really, really coming off him. But I think, Tom, when somebody's doing that, that's why you revert to long balls. If it's not happening, if you're giving the ball to the wide areas and for one reason or another, it's not being delivered into the box, then what happens is you start throwing in balls from deep. I think the one shining light for Dundee United last week was Ross Docherty in the middle of the park, who kept trying to do good things on the ball, who kept trying to drive his team on. On another day, he could have got the goal that could have won them the game.
He was very good going forward.
He inspired his players, and that's what they're going to need on Saturday against a Raith Rovers side, who I still think they'll be sort of struggling to believe they're still in this title race, you know, the way United's kicked on, and Raith have had their struggles as well. But Alan's right, it's coming down to this one game. And at 5 o'clock on Saturday night, you know, you certainly don't want to be on the wrong side of the result, either team, because you know, regardless of what you do in your final few games, the other team can still win the title by what they do. So, yeah, it's a massive game for both clubs.
Yeah, George, they've both been better before Christmas than after Christmas, but is the difference that Raith Rovers are delighted to be where they are? Because if you looked at the start of the season, the talk of the championship was Dundee United and who might be their challengers. Mm. Raith were not top of that list of likely challengers. For the life of me, I can't remember who is. Probably likes at Inverness in there. But I mean, Raith were the mid-table team last season.
Yeah, they were a fairly new team over the summer as well. They brought in some good signings that I think people were really interested to see how they did, and they've worked out really well, I think. But in terms of the form of both teams, I was just having a look. I was actually a bit surprised at how good Raith's recent form is since they beat United. Mm-hmm. They've won 4 games. They haven't conceded in the last 3.
Yeah.
Which
they're recovering from their bad start.
That's 4 clean sheets in the last 5. The other one being that game at Arbroath. So they are coming into this game with a bit of form. I think in terms of being happy to be in the title, is that. Yeah, I can see that. I think there's more pressure on United just because it's Dundee United in the Championship. We've talked about that plenty, but both clubs in this city, when they're in this division, the expectation is they win it and they win it well.
I hold my hands up and take responsibility for that. I predicted United would win the league by October, maybe a bit frivolous with that. But at the same time, as a follower of football in this city, and the same would go for Dundee, and it did this time last season, I'm looking at that table, and even though the United are top, part of me is saying, why aren't you further ahead? Why haven't you sewn this up? Because that's what's expected of them. Raith don't have that expectation.
Yeah, there is about that, but I'm sure every single player who signed for Dundee United knew what they were signing up for, that there is pressure playing for this club, the size of club, the size of fan base, which should be a really good atmosphere again at Tannadice on Saturday, and these players have to stand up and be counted and show they have the ability to play for Dundee United and win things with Dundee United. I think this is where the season comes down on Saturday. It doesn't decide who's going to win the league, but I think it decides who takes control of it, and it's up to United to make sure it's them.
I mean, Alan, it's not really overstating to say this is one of the biggest games in United's recent history for all sorts of reasons, because A, they want to get promoted, so there's the prestige, there's financial. Jim Goodwin, as we say, again, it's just a fact for managers of Dundee United, if they're in the Championship, you're struggling to keep your job if you don't get them up. And then the bit that we should have extensively gone over last week, but I forgot to mention it, there's talk of, and you'll get, keep me right with the bees, Brentford and Brighton looking at an investment. You would think that investment takes a big step closer if United are back in the Premier League. So there's all sorts of issues, not just with this game, because it doesn't decide the title, but over the next few weeks that United have to win.
Yeah, well, whether the interest is predicated on what division they're in is arguable, but I would suggest the price tag certainly is.
Yeah.
In terms of how much a shareholding would be valued in kind of empirical terms, for a championship club is very different to a premiership club, and I'm sure Brentford will be very much keeping an eye on that. I think Brighton have other irons in the fire, so I wouldn't expect them back at the Dundee United table unless that was to collapse elsewhere. But Brentford, very much one to watch as the week goes on, but that is probably very much once things have settled gradually, you can have a grown-up discussion, because very hard to do anything definitive while you don't know what division you're going to be in. And yeah, I think the important thing is, probably from a United perspective and from a Raith Rovers perspective actually, is to not actually look too much at the sort of macro picture, because
yes.
I think at that point,
that's for the directors.
Yeah, exactly. I think at that point, the pressure of just a single football match does become slightly suffocating, whereas you just need to be looking at it as a one-off match against a team that 11 versus 11, you would, all things being considered, be hopeful of coming out on top against, but haven't done it three times so far this season. So it's time to kind of stop the talking and just, this should be a game that United players relish. We've been told all season that these are big game players, big characters, and they are. I mean, these boys have careers that speak to that. Mm-hmm. You get guys like Jack Walton, Declan Gallagher, Ross Docherty, Craig Sybold, Louis Malt, Tony Watt. These are guys with international caps, titles, Champions League appearances, promotions down south as well. So this should be the sort of game that makes them stand up and go, do you know what, I fancy this one. Go out, pack Tannadice, here we go, this is the stage I belong at, and perform on it. It shouldn't be a case of, we'll talk about nerves, we'll talk about wilting in front of the fans. It's not, it can be a wee bit overstated. There is a degree of pressure, but it wasn't toxic at the weekend. It was a wee bit, it was apathy, there was disappointment. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, there isn't this bear pit of fans waiting to turn on the players. It's not really like that.
It's part of that. They're not daft. They want promotion. So they're no turning on the team right now. Maybe if it all goes wrong, and hopefully it doesn't, but maybe then you get the anger.
Yeah.
But right now, they want the team to do well.
Every football... so like every big football club kind of thinks their team is super unique, or their fandom is unique. It's not really.
No.
It's no different to when I covered Hibs, or it's less severe than when I covered Hearts. I mean, Christ, Tynecastle turns. Tannadice is fine, and it's not an excuse the players should have. It's they really get back behind the team when given any. Encouragement to do so. So it's just about giving them that. And even when things don't start well, or if things do get a bit nervous, this toxicity or this difficulty to play in front of a packed Tannadice, it's just, I think it can be a bit overstated sometimes, and absolutely should not be an excuse for any of these players.
It's just the results, though, because we've talked a few times in the AZ game would probably be the last big crowd
big,
where
big
the
game,
United
yeah.
have won the big game. So that's where the conversation comes from, isn't it? Just the results. So it's time to go and put that right, I would say.
But I mean, I think Alan makes a very good point, which is not unusual, to be fair to him. But I mean, if you talk about grounds, I think Dens can be a difficult place for teams. I think Tynecastle, the minute something goes wrong, can be a difficult place. In the modern era, I tend to think Ibrox and Parkhead, when things aren't going too well, different if they're losing, but if it's 0-0 after 20-30 minutes, it tends to go quiet. And that's what you notice. The atmosphere's a bit strange. But United's one of the grounds where it doesn't matter what's happened the week before, when the players run out on that park, their fans will be getting right behind them. They just always do.
Yeah, and they can use that to their advantage on Saturday, Tam. There's going to be 10,000 plus, I think, at the game, the way people are talking. And the vast majority of those fans which Raith Rovers won't be too happy about, it'll be Dundee United fans. And they can use that to their advantage. Absolutely. The fans have backed them. I've backed them all season. But, again, what I would say is the pressure is on Dundee United in as much as you do feel, well, they do. They have to win this game to keep the sort of, you know, the league title in their own hands. I do think there are going to be drop points beyond this time. There's no doubt about that. We've seen Raith Rovers get to the top of the table and absolutely crumble, effectively, because they were in front. You know, they didn't pick up full points. And going forward, I do expect there to be drop points, but the facts will be on Saturday night. If Dundee United don't win the game, if Raith do the business in their final six games or whatever it is, they will be champions. So that's the sort of pressure that United have to take into that game, but they have to embrace it, Tam. They have to take, you know, that they've got the 90% of the crowd will be right behind them on Saturday and pushing them on. And I'm sure they're going to back them, even if it is still 0-0 at half time. But if they see a team who is in the ascendancy, if they play the way they did, it starts part where for, you know, 70% of that game they were well on top, but they just didn't get the goal. If they could keep that going and have the fans back, and I'm sure it will get them over the line.
In fairness to United too, I'm thinking back to the start of the season, there was a nightmare of a League Cup section, and everybody was going, oh no, what's going on here? Apart from Dafty me, I was shouting from the rafters of stupid things, but the players reacted, and when the league came around, started like an express train. Somebody says
They did. You know, that's
you know what? You didn't ask a question.
It was a statement that threw open to the world.
You're absolutely right with that, but that seems like an eternity ago now.
But it's not, though. That's the truth. Only a few months ago, this team was under pressure, and it came out and reacted in exactly the right way.
Of course it did. And the vast majority of players that did that are still there. But I do think that the performances at home and some of the performances in general have got Jim Goodwin thinking now, what team do I actually put out? The guys that he's pinned a lot of faith in have maybe not quite performed to the levels they once were. It's how does he get the mix absolutely right? And when we saw on Saturday, you know, Mark Thompson at left back, that young lad has played right wing, right back, left back. Now, that's a lot to pin on a young man who's just come back from a loan spell at Montrose, I think it was. So what's going on in Jim Goodwin's head? Are Dundee United not got the squad that maybe we think they actually have? Obviously, he rates Miller Thompson very highly, and he is an attacking type player, but surely there must be other options available to him rather than play Miller Thompson at left back. You know, I can't try to pick the manager's team, but I wonder what's going through his head when it comes to selection. And Saturday's show against Inverness will only have given him more sort of food for thought on what sort of team he puts out against Raith Rovers.
I'll try to pick his team a wee bit. It's surely unthinkable this weekend that Louis Moult would start on the bench again.
No, I think Louis Moult's got to start. He made a real difference when he came on. I think he would be the first to say that he's missed, you know, a few chances in recent games, and there's been hits and misses in terms of performances, but that goes with pretty much everybody in that United side in 2024. So, but he's come on and scored a preposterous goal.
Yes.
A quite simply preposterous goal. And I'd maybe put him in a very, very select band of people, perhaps along with a Tony Watt, a Dylan Easton, Louis Vaughan, and out of people in this division that are capable of scoring that goal. Just due to the technique, awareness and audacity that's required. Mm. There's very few footballers that have got a
speed of thought.
Yeah.
It wasn't a spec. I mean, he's taking a gamble that he gets it on target, but he's reacted to
and he's also had to leave Cammy Kerr flailing about on the deck, just shrugged him off. And that was a degree of strength before
I
then.
I just wonder now, when he's sitting on the bench in that first half, if he's watching Mark Ridgers and going,
he's off
where
his
he's
line.
Standing, he's off his line, and he's got it in his head, and if the opportunity comes, that's really fast thinking. So to execute it the way he did was unbelievable.
We asked him that afterwards, basically said, is that something you'd spied, or you know, did you have a quick glance? He basically said, well, you know, as a player, where the goalkeeper will be when you are at any particular point on a pitch, because goalkeepers goalkeepers are coached as well. I don't need to tell you that.
I think Mark Rogers was in the right place because you've got to play as a sweeper. Yeah. You've got to play anything over the top. Yeah. You've got to be able to come that. So if you're standing way back on your goal line, it opens up a whole field of play for other players to run into.
Yeah.
But you certainly don't expect the centre forward to do that.
So it was a moment of absolute magic, and ironically, probably the toughest chance Louis Moult's had in the previous, you know, whatever, 3-4 games, and he's popped that away. So hopefully that's a really positive thing for him, because from my view, he's the best finisher United have got. Mm. I think he's the best out-and-out number nine that United have got. And if he's on it, then everything else can kind of revolve around him, because he's good at holding the ball up, he's good at scoring, he can bring people into the play. If he's at it and fully fit, then... Jim Gooden got a wee bit of criticism for the fact that Moult didn't start. It's worth saying that Jim Gooden was talking, it was that Moult maybe didn't have 90 minutes in him. He was still, you know, just coming back from a slight knock. So I don't think that the manager can be... dragged over the coals too much for that particular decision, but he's made a big decision when he's made a big impact when he came on. He'll definitely start against Rovers.
It's one of his other great sort of values to the team, that everybody can play badly. Hopefully, he plays well, but he's always involved. He won't disappear from a game if things aren't going his way.
Oh, a huge character, yes, he's a huge character, and. He'll be one of the loudest voices in the dressing room before the match, halftime, when things aren't going well. He's an important guy to have on the football pitch. Him, see if you've got Jack Walton, Declan Gallagher, Ross Docherty and Louis Moult running through the spine of that team, I feel more comfortable in terms of the characters you have on the pitch and the ability to drag yourself through the difficult moments in football matches. So, providing they're all fit, I think that could be a real boost for United.
I was going to say, you tend to think these guys play every minute they're capable of playing between now and the end of the season, just because that influence they have on the team. Like I say, everyone can have a bad game from time to time, but you're talking about boys who will still influence the team, however well they're playing individually.
Definitely. Yeah, I think if you are able to get out there and put in a performance that won't make you a liability to the side, then I think you'll be strapped up and got out there. I suspect that'll be the case, for example, for Scott McMahon this week. I doubt he'll be 100%, but I suspect he'll play, because the left-back situation is a right headache. If Scott McMahon's not there, because Bear was alluding to the decision to play Miller Thompson, I personally would have played Kevin Holt at left-back and brought Ross Graham in beside Gallagher, but I get managers don't like splitting up centre-back pairings.
Kevin Holt, of course, Dennis played as a left-back.
Exactly, he's played the majority of his career at left-back, so I thought that would have been the obvious one, but, managers...
Sometimes I think he maybe regrets now, because...
Perhaps. But the point, my point being, that's not even an option now. Kevin Holt will be probably...
Well, I was away to say, one of the great things about doing podcasts or journalism in general is... hypocrisy is quite acceptable.
Of course it is.
I and others, but it's up to you to put your hands up, sat at the start of the season and says, Kevin Holt, the player you would sign, say, come the end of March. Devastating loss, if you ask me. And it looks like he might have played his last game of the season. I hope not. But
hope not as well.
Just the fact that they need a scan to determine how bad the knee injury is he suffered, but when you reach the middle of the week after the game, and the swelling's not going down and they can't do the scan, you tend to think it's a bad one, don't you?
Yeah, and speaking to Ross Docherty, who obviously came to United with Kev last summer, Ross Docherty pointed out that the feeling in the dressing room was a similar injury to one that he did last season, and that one kept him out for 2 months. They were hopeful that it might not actually be as bad as that one, just from what Kevin was apparently saying in the dressing room and stuff. So, however... you're not just talking about what it would take to diagnose and remedy the issue. You're then talking about getting them back up to sharpness. Yeah. I don't see all that happening in the less than 6 weeks left of the season. So I think that might be that. So Ross Graham, and you come and grab that jersey, because he was probably rightly, in fact, from what the manager said, I think you can surmise that he was definitely... annoyed about coming out that team on a period of good form. So go in there and take that frustration out on your next seven opponents.
George, it's a player you've followed since his early days. Mm-hmm. But I was just going to say, we're speaking about players that influence the team through you know, finger pointing, saying the right things on the pitch and in the dressing room beforehand. One, I always think players like Holt are maybe undervalued because he's just, it's his calmness. He always looks calm, whatever the situation, and that can affect, that has a positive effect on those. When things are sort of going against you and you look at the boy in the middle of the defence and he's sort of sorting his hair and looking relaxed, it can, you go, well, he's okay, so yeah. I'll be okay.
I think in that position that it has an even bigger effect. If you're a centre-back and you're composed and the ball comes to you in a pressure situation and the attacker's closing you down and you just take a nice simple touchdown and pass it off to somebody else, I think that does kind of breed across the team. And Kevin Holt, he's always been a good player on the ball, I think. Mm-hmm. Coming through Queen of the South as a left-back and then obviously moving to Dundee, I always rated his ability as an attacking fullback. Sometimes I think defensively at Dundee, I think he got found out sometimes, but he was learning his game at that point, and you can see how much he's learned since then, since he's come at United. I was a wee bit surprised that I think in the summer that United went from Partick, but I'm not surprised at how well he's done, I have to say.
Because he'd one of their best performers, hasn't he?
He's just a very, very, it's probably damning with faint praise, but I was going to say a very, very, very solid Championship defender, but I think he's got the capability to go up to the Premiership as well. I think just a very, very solid defender who can play a bit.
I have to say,
well,
just in my humble opinion, I thought they were signing a player for a year in the Championship. Get us out of this league and that, you'll get your reward. But the level of his performance at centre-back, I would say he's worth the place. Still, hopefully, when they go up.
I suspect that if they... regardless of what division they're in, that Kevin Holt's probably done enough to get another year, just partly because of his performances, but also due to the intangible stuff like his versatility, albeit they chose not to use it last weekend, that versatility and the sort of personality he is around the place. It was something that Jim Goodman spoke a lot about at the start of the season when things were going really well, was building a certain character profile within his squad. And although the conversation has now moved on to rather more pressing matters in terms of trying to win games again and get promoted, that remains a very, very important aspect of what Dundee United are trying to do. And I think Kevin Holt is, as well as the footballing virtues that he brings, I think will provide depth, versatility, and is the right sort.
I must admit, and this is no reflection on Ross Graham whatsoever, because he's an excellent prospect, but I look at the Gallagher-Holt partnership, and that's a big blow for me.
Absolutely.
Because they look like, in terms of character, personality, styles, reading of the game, they look like the perfect central defensive partnership.
There's a nice balance there, wasn't there? And that's going to be a loss for United. George is right about what I like about Kevin Holt is, having played a lot of his career at left back, where you do have to link up a bit more on the ball than centre halves do, he's taken that into his centre half. So when he gets the ball, he doesn't just look, he can put his foot through it when he's got it and when he wants it. But in general, his head's up. He's looking to get Ross Graham and Ross Docherty and Craig Sybald on the ball with nice passes, and he can pass the ball as well. So it is a big loss for Dundee United. And the concern is now, they've still got six games to go here, maybe more, you know, depending on the way things pan out. Heaven forbid something happens to one of the two centre-halves that are in there. They've got the lad that came in from St Johnstone, Alan, what was...
Sam McClelland, but I doubt he's going to be exactly at optimum sharpness if he's called upon at this point.
Has he played at all?
No, I've not seen him kick a ball.
I mean, that's all hypothetical, but that would be a big worry for me. I mean, Declan Gallagher has had a few issues throughout the season. If Kevin Holt is out for the remainder of the campaign, and I hope that's not the case, but if he is... You know, and there's going to be some huge games coming up. If one of the two centre-halves were to get injured, it would leave United with a real headache, I would think.
Just on the type of player and the type of game it's likely to be, Holt's the kind that in that sort of game where it's possibly not going to be a great passing move that wins it, but one piece of good football, Holt's got that in him. David Witherspoon, while he's obviously not fully match fit, if he can make the bench, he... again could be an important addition to the squad on Saturday, couldn't he?
I think he's certainly been missed. He's a very calm footballer. He's
sorting the game down at Wraith.
Yeah, he's impactful in the final third. That's an exceptional point. He was probably the best player on the pitch. Stark Spark, I forgot all about that. It seems like a long time ago, but that was certainly Wotherspoon's finest hour in a Dundee United jersey. And frankly, maybe he wasn't ready to complete 90 minutes, but the decision to take him off remains one that's still baffles me to this day, because he didn't look tired on that day. But that's by the by. If he's able to, I'd be surprised if he was to come in after 4 weeks out, yeah, especially with a muscular issue, and play and start the match. But if he has 20 minutes in him to be impactful and to do something in the final third to carve open Wraith Rovers, if that's the flow of the game, then I think he could be an exceptionally valuable player
maybe
to have.
Maybe come on and keep everyone calm, keep the ball and maintain a lead.
Well, the thing that you would suggest, I mean, obviously, it'd be wonderful to sit here and think, do you know what? Dundee United are going to right all the wrongs of their previous games against Wraith Rovers and win 3-0. There's nothing in the previous meetings between the sides that makes you think that is in any way possible.
Still be alive in injury time.
I think as well, you look at, I mean, the games that Wraith have won, it's took a spectacular goal in the last minute from Scott Brown. It's took a wonder goal from Dylan Easton, I've got to say, at Tannadice. A goal well above championship level, that's done a moment of magic. And you know, it could be the same again, but United have got to believe that their moment of magic is going to be their turn. You know, it's going to be a Louis Moat or a Tony Watt moment of magic is going to turn this game on Saturday. It's going to be really tight.
Yeah, I think every bit of evidence suggests that it'll go to the wire again. Mm. You could barely slip a bit of paper between these sides in every contest. So if you've got someone like David Wotherspoon that can change the game off the bench, then that's a real positive because... glancing at the bench just at the weekend, there's some talented boys on there, but there's not many of them that are absolutely firing at the moment, whereas you would bring on a David Wotherspoon and know for a fact that this is a guy who loves a big occasion, loves the feeling of, you know, being involved in a game and doing a moment that can live long.
I'm also with Tom, and the fact is if you're winning the game and there's 15 minutes to go, you get him on the park and you just give him the ball. Give him the ball.
These throw players are valuable. Give him the ball. That's untalked about.
Look to find him every time with the ball and he keeps it. He wins free kicks. He kills the game for you. You know, and that's another side to David Wotherspoon, you know. So, yeah, he's a good weapon to have, certainly.
And finally, and briefly, certificate of effort for the week. Does it go to Ian Murray for trying to... Fergie style, get in your head with a United have maybe cut the ticket allocation because they're worried and they're running scared or whatever.
Ian Murray seems such a polite guy to calmly spoken guy. I don't think that's in his makeup, is it? Is he a bit different? Alan, you know him better than us, obviously. Eh?
I remember
that. He seemed to do it quite politely.
He'll smile as he knifes you. No, every interaction I've ever had with Ian Murray, he's been an absolute gentleman and was always one of these guys, and we'll all in this room know people that are very useful for that. If you needed a talking head on a Hibs story, he would always pick up his phone and you could get former Hibs legend Ian Murray insists, and then that shoe filled the paper for another day. So he was always good for that. And
which the definition of a legend in that context, and I'm sure he is a genuine Hibs legend anyway, is the person that answers the phone's a legend.
Absolutely. The man that's willing to discuss the topic of the day is a legend, or at worst a hero. But this is a man who, what did he shave? 7-0 into the back of his head to reference a derby or something. He did something, or he shaved something in his head to reference an Edinburgh derby. So this is a man who likes
Scatchell. It's a very Edinburgh thingy, Scatchell. When he came to United for his brief spell, Scatchell got the number 51 because it was 5-1. They seem to love that week. We all go for a few pints after the game, and by the next week we've forgotten, never mind the next derby or the next decade. Yeah.
But nevertheless, that does tell you that Ian Murray likes a wee spicy rivalry,
It did occur to me that sometimes it's the honest reaction that can cut a thing dead, because Jim Goodwin seemed to go, eh? Yeah. What?
Yeah. I've got to say as well, Ian Murray comes across as a young manager, but he's an experienced manager. I was just thinking there, Tom, the day Dundee won the title at Dens under Hartley, they beat Dumbarton, that's all goes back. Is that about 10 years ago?
2014, yeah.
Ian Murray was a Dumbarton manager. that day, a very young man. So, you know,
Jack Ross, yeah, his assistant.
He served his time. So, you know, he's a very, very shrewd manager. And you've seen that with what he's done with Raith Rovers this season. And maybe he's just learning that.
Well, I think the one thing you can say is how his team handles it, time will tell. But you already know he won't bottle it.
Yeah. No,
and he won't be overly nervous about what's to come.
And Raith Rovers are doing what Raith Rovers do. They've been doing this all season. Just the odd wind up with social media. They're happy to be bombastic. They're happy to be disruptors. That's the role that they're playing in this.
And Dundee, they do it with a smile, don't they?
And Dundee United are trying to be in their mind, they are trying to be the bigger team. They didn't want to say anything about, for example, the ticket issue, which is why in the end, when Luigi Capuano finally did get poked enough by Andy Barrowman and Ian Murray to say something, it was a bit vague because they don't. I don't think they want to give every technical detail to do with their stadium out, but wanted to make it clear that we're not reducing tickets due to a level of pettiness. It's because, as he used the word several times, operationally, the shed is not in a position to accommodate the full amount of fans that were last time. So although people were pleading confusion and saying, I don't understand, what does that even mean? Pretty clear to me that something has changed with the stand from the last time they played at Tannadice to now. And I'm sure whatever that will be remedied over the summer. But there's a degree of silliness going on that Raith Rovers have leaned into all season, and Dundee United have been a little bit more... Po-faced seems harsh, but I can't think of another way to put it. They've been a little bit more straight-laced about the whole thing, so it makes for a fun dynamic, but that all shuts up at this weekend, and it's about who wins the football match.
I'd say the Raith fans who can't get tickets is, at least you're no queuing for the bridge with these roadworks. George, Dundee, before we get on to the top six race... Big signing news this week. I saw over my coffee this morning.
They've got a new groundsman.
Well, not yet.
Not yet. He's coming in the summer.
Are we trusting him to see out his notice at Dundee United properly without kind of digging up holes in the turf? And...
Well, yeah, let's see.
Did I have to sign a pre-contract?
I've got no idea.
I don't know. It's one of the most interested signings of the season.
The Morris Johnston of gardening.
He's been banned from B&Q.
But yeah, it's a good sign from a Dundee point of view that they'll have somebody in place to sort out the big issue they've had this season with the pitch.
Well, you see, it's a good time. We're right in the middle of an investigation into the pitch not being ready. It's sort of like, what we're going to investigate? They didn't have a groundsman. Should we start there? I believe they had a contract. They've currently got contractors.
They do. A company called Allgrass.
It's a shame they couldn't fill their pitch, never mind the void.
Paul Murray is his name. He's been at Dundee United since 2022, previously a greenkeeper. Conte's LinkedIn, anyway. He's coming across the road. I'm trying to think who's the last person to come across the road.
It's been a few. It's never been a...
Craig Curran, probably.
I've got to say...
The groundsman used to come across the road every day because they shared some of the equipment. Yeah.
I've got to say, anybody who comes across the road has got to hit the ground running. So he's got to go off the...
Which is not easy, given that bog of a pitch.
pretty difficult.
Pressure's on. But,
and he'll be getting booed constantly as he's got the lawnmower out. It's going to be a tough situation for him.
Next time there's a derby, he doesn't want a broken corner flag or something like that at the way end. This is the thing, the poor boy's doing an excellent job in anonymity,
George.
thanks to George, you'll have police protection for the next derby.
I'm sure he'll be fine.
It's not that kind of city.
And good luck to him as well, moving on to a new job. That's what they'll say.
But you'll need a bit of luck.
Let's
hope it doesn't rain too much.
He's got some work on in the summer, definitely.
And hopefully by the end of the summer, he'll be looking after two pitches, or certainly planning to.
Yeah, good news on the stadium. SEPA, Scottish Environmental Protection Agency, came back with no objections to Dundee's plans at Camperdown, which is a big step because you can imagine environmental, there'd be concerns with such a big project. So that's...
I don't want to be cynical, but I would hope that anybody planning a building, which it basically is in 2024, would manage to meet environmental concerns.
Yeah, yeah.
I know I'm going to have a big diesel generator. Smokes bubbling. They might know not to do that by now.
But next...
In a
site next to Camperdown Park, you could imagine there might be some environmental concerns with keeping Camperdown pristine.
You mean that Dundee Park that's been surrounded by factories for the last 15 years?
Well, it's probably changed.
I've got to say, there was an NCR factory.
It's a hurdle.
Everyone's a hurdle. You want to tick all the boxes, because very often it's the things that you think wouldn't be a problem that do trip you up.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be. And, we've spoken about groundsmen, we've spoken about stadium. There's football again this weekend.
Finally.
You know what? It was great. I got up this morning and as I do, I checked online because I'm getting too old to get along at the shop for the papers in person before 11 anyway. So, and I saw the headline, Tony Docker, I'm focused on survival. Well done, Doc, I see.
Well, that wasn't our headline, that was the BBC's headline.
Was it?
I write better headlines than that, surely.
I have to pay for my former newspaper online, George. So yeah, it's got to be free.
Our paper was too busy outing groundsmen. The big stuff.
not the only paper. It was everyone. It's a massive game. I mean, in terms of survival, last week I had a wee look back at all the seasons since we've had playoffs. So 11th place, obviously being relegation playoff. The highest points total for any team that finished 11th since playoffs came in was 36 points.
Yeah.
Dundee have 36 points.
I think you saw that last game. Dundee's last one, Aberdeen, you mentioned it being Tony Docher's reaction.
Yeah.
Maybe gave away slightly his private feelings.
There will be a wee bit of concern that both the team, Aberdeen and Ross County, subsequently went on and won matches. I think more so Ross County. I think when you're playing teams around you, and that's a big thing. Nobody really gains any ground. Somebody's losing ground. But when you're playing a team that's in the top six, and that's like 3 points against the head sort of thing. So Ross County beating Hearts, where did that come from? But I think there is a recognition that, I mean, there's a recognition that Dundee won't be so bad in their last... How many games have they got left?
But
nine or ten games.
Is survival a euphemism for... Remember what the aim was.
Yeah.
And he's not going to say, we've got there now. But that's the feeling. And he's just reminding people. Of course, great chance at the weekend. St Johnstone won't be easy, but Hibs have got... is it Rangers Hibs have got?
Yeah.
So there's a chance that a Dundee win puts them back in sixth place. But there's also a good chance the way Hibs have been playing, and I would say Hibs are favourites now, that they'll be sixth. So it's... Wise management, is it not, to remind the fans, hey, remember what the goal for the season was and we're overachieving already?
Yeah, I think so, and he's done it. He's done that all season, to be fair, to Tony Docherty. And he made a good point in the media this week saying that what they've wanted to be is be competitive in every game they've played. And I think, obviously, take the Old Firm out, but I think...
Yes, he was a bit loose with his use of the phrase, and we have.
Take the Old Firm
forgive him that.
Out of that statement, and I think they have. I can only think of maybe... I'm thinking back, it's St Mirren and Paisley a few months ago on a cold Tuesday or Wednesday night where they didn't really kick a ball. But other than that, they've been in most games. They've given themselves a real chance in most games, and they've won games as well. And they've done it by endeavour and producing the sort of football we've not really seen at Dens for quite a number of years. Tom, you know, they've got exciting players in that team now, and they're producing. Hopefully, I'm looking forward to a really good game on Saturday. Set up nicely because. I think Dundee they can't afford to be gung-ho, but I think they can afford to certainly go for it in the knowledge that, you know, defeat isn't the worst result in the world for Dundee, you know, but if they go for it, the rewards are there to get themselves into that top six. I don't think St Johnstone are particularly, you know, well-blessed in the top half of their team, you know, in the forward areas. You know, I think maybe the goal stats will back that up. So, yeah, I'm looking for Dundee to go and get the 3 points that they never got the last time they were at McDermott Park when we're 2-0 up with 15 minutes to go, Tom.
The interesting thing, just from speaking to colleagues that support St Johnstone and the likes, for what you're discussing there in terms of the final third, there seems to be a feeling that there is pace and there is direct threat in that St Johnstone side, but in terms of actually servicing them, in terms of actually coherently creating chances, there just seems to be nothing there at the moment. And you would like to think that Dundee have shown this season that they've got a defence capable of dealing with that sort of threat, and it's just about what kind of they can do in the final third and not leaving enough gaps on the break that those pacey strikers can potentially.
Yeah, I thought those two were really good at the end, actually. Just a few weeks back, I was quite impressed with how they made the most of that after obviously taking an early lead, which helps in that situation.
Raw pace is always a threat.
But I think that might be a good thing from Dundee.
Walking pace was my fastest.
But Dundee have had that experience of playing against them. They know what's coming with Sidibe and Kimpioka. If either or one of them are playing, there's no surprise factor, because obviously those two came in January, so Dundee defence hadn't come up against them. They know exactly what they're up against now. But I'm really looking forward to it. It feels like so long since Dundee played a game.
It does.
With that game been called off, obviously. So to get back in a game down the road in Perth should be a good away following. Are you going there?
Yeah, I'll be there. That's actually a good point. About
I hope you're
not,
going
not
to
having
the
a
new
game.
Museum first to see the Stone of Destiny. What are you talking about?
It's a pub, the Stone of Destiny. No, that's a good point about not having a game. That could be a concern, the fact after an Aberdeen game, they were on a high. You want a game right on the back of that time. And unfortunately for Dundee, they've had to wait about 2.5 weeks now, I think it is. So,
They did have a bounce game against Hearts.
Yeah.
Which they won 5-1.
Hammered
them,
reading
the...
Were they not 5-1 up with 10 minutes to go and lost 7-5? Is that not what they do against Hearts?
They were 4-0 up after 14 minutes, apparently.
Said bitterly. Yeah.
From reading, obviously, that's a great boost in getting some goals and a couple of players back from injury. Reading Stephen Naismith's comments on it, I think he was saying he was... Basically, they're playing out from the back no matter what's happening in games like that. So I think Dundee absolutely made the most of it and made Hearts make mistakes in that situation. That's what it read like to me from his comments. So that's interesting that maybe Dundee's pressing might be on point when it comes to St Johnstone, but I can't imagine seeing them playing out from the back.
I can't imagine Craig Levein would fall into that trap.
You said the two words that worry me most about this game. Craig Levein, as he did in his first season. I mean, people remember him at United for being a nearly man when it came to trophies and getting them high up the league. But his first season, he came in with him in a dire situation. And one thing about Craig, he's no boy for waiting till the split and saying, we'll beat the teams around us. He tries to get the business done as soon as possible. And I think, in a lot of ways, I think there's a big prize in the top six there for Dundee to try to play for, and there's still points to make sure they don't get hauled down into any sort of squeaky bum time. But I just think St Johnstone need the points more.
Yeah, I think Craig Levein fact, I think they'll see St Johnstone over the line. I think they'll be okay. I don't think they've got a lot in the final third, as Alan said. They do have a bit of pace, but it's converting that pace into goals, Tom. You know, turning that into sort of goals and points on the board. But Craig Levein will put his side out that he'll get enough points to keep them up. I'm positive about that. You know, you'll see the game on Saturday as an opportunity to do just that. Mm-hmm. The first thing he'll do is let's make sure we don't lose the game. Second thing, can we actually go and, you know, do something that's going to win us the game? And, you know, it'll be tough. But Dundee, I think that was the early game up at McDermott Park. That was one of the first signs you saw Dundee side going, we've got something going for us this season. We can play a bit, because to go up to McDermott is the first time in a long time where they really did pin St Johnstone back, and just a wee bit of slackness in the final 15 minutes, and it was a mental thing. It cost them an extra 2 points that day. But it's set up for a great game. There'll be a good Dundee following up there. I'm sure St Johnstone will be backed well, and I'm looking forward to it, Tom.
Hope the sun shines.
Well, I suppose that's a good thing for Dundee. They're not actually playing at Dens this week by the amount of rain we've had in the city, and there's still a bit more to come, I think, before the weekend. So, we shouldn't have any issues, certainly up at McDermott Park. But, the rewards are there for Dundee. The carrot's there. So that's what I'm looking to see. One thing we were talking about just a minute ago about sort of the gap between their last game. But one thing I would say about Tony Docherty's teams this season, they've been ready whenever they've gone on the park. Mm-hmm. Bar that night at Celtic Park when they were 6-0 down at half-time.
We'll not mention that.
No, we'll not mention that. But in general, I think the way they set themselves up in training, they're ready to go. The manager's got, and it's not just 11 players. There's a squad there. Mm-hmm. I know they've got a couple of injuries, a few guys back, a few guys out, but whoever gets the jersey tends to come on and do a job.
And George, the other thing about the unwanted extended break, chance for a few injuries to clear?
Yeah, it ended up being quite nicely timed, I think, on that front. Speaking to the manager yesterday, he said he's got four players back and quite big players as well. Trevor Carson has obviously been missing for a while. We've got Zach Robinson, which is handy because Curtis Main is going to be out. And Jordan McGee has been a miss in the last couple of games. He's been one of Dundee's steadiest players, not just this season, but for a number of years. But this season, I think he's stepped on a level again. I think taking on that right wing back slot. And
Six Me's the kind of boy too who can carry an absence of 2 or 3 weeks better than most. He could come back in and he just looks a naturally fit boy.
Yeah, and he's come back
he's
early
again. As well. Yeah, he's experienced again, to slot in without too much difficulty. You know, I would imagine if he comes back, it will be in the right wing back situation.
Aye, because they struggled a wee bit to put a replacement in because Josh Mulligan's been injured as well.
Of course.
And because look, I think McCowan played there for a half against Kilmarnock, which was interesting. And he's been a goal threat as well. I mean, he scored the winner against St Johnstone at Dens, and he's done really well since the turn of the year. There was a number of, there's a big squad, but there was a number of players missing going into the break. So it's
also
good to get
him
back.
You've got Lyle Cameron back from international, where he's again performed very
scored
well.
A goal.
It was a great goal.
But also saw, you know, Michael Mellon coming on. Unfortunately, it was the last 5 or 6 minutes, but he gets himself in a scoring situation, Tom, and he nearly gets something. Michael Mellon has got something to offer Dundee between now and the end of the season. He's got goals in him.
Just absolutely.
Be interesting to see if he gets a start or.
For me, in that sense, he's another mole. Whether he scores, whether he plays well, he's always involved.
Yeah.
He doesn't let, just because he's not going to win, sometimes it's a foul, but just because he's not going to win the ball doesn't mean to say he won't put a challenge in or run towards a defender who is. And I like strikers that don't just rely on their natural ability.
Mm-hmm. I thought he's the most accomplished finisher, I would say, in the squad.
Yes,
I think, just in terms of natural ability. It's the kind of surrounding parts of his game that he's still learning, because obviously he's still a young player. And we've not seen him really of late. I don't think he came off the bench last time out against Aberdeen.
He just woke up last week after that challenge by Liam Gordon.
Well, there is that. Yes. I was going to mention that. That was obviously...
Poor lad, he thinks, this has been a long game. Still going on.
Thankfully, he's recovered from that, because it was quite scary at the time. I think it was quite scary for him. I haven't spoken to him since. Says he can't remember a thing from the game. But hopefully it's the manager was asked about that the press conference yesterday, and he said nothing to say about Liam Gordon's response of late. So I think it's line drawn under that.
Excuse me for being out of the country. What was his response of late?
He wasn't happy with Tony Docherty's post-match comments after the last game.
That's understandable. I'm not actually disputing Tony Docherty's comments, but if you say something about something that isn't complimentary, even though it's true, you don't expect them to thank you for it.
But I think it was sensible for the Dundee manager to not then respond back and you end up with it for that.
Funnily enough, because this happened to me once. I landed on somebody when I was playing in goal and landed on their throat, and it's actually, it was worse for the boy, don't get me wrong. But when I saw the guy gurgling away on the ground, I didn't feel great myself, I must admit. And I've never forgotten that. for however robust the challenge was, yeah. Liam Gordon didn't mean to hurt the lad.
That was the thing about it. I thought, you know, as I've always said, I'm a big fan of centre halves, and I thought it was a robust challenge from Liam Gordon. Unfortunately for him and Michael Mellon, I've got Michael Mellon gets the ball, and Liam Gordon goes right through the back of Michael Mellon. But the biggest thing was, the referee didn't stop mm-hmm. play. I still can't believe that, because the two of them were on the ground line. That play should have been stopped right away. But it's suggested to me
the reason that VAR that day didn't look at the penalty claim that Dundee had when play was because they were aware of how long play had gone mm-hmm. on. And it shouldn't have gone on that long. Yeah. The ball shouldn't have got anywhere near the penalty box because the game should have been stopped immediately.
I wouldn't be surprised though.
I think it is a bit of a conspiracy theory, I should add. I think they just didn't realise how bad it was.
From Michael Mellon's point of view, if he gets on the pitch, which I expect he will do this time, I have the feeling that his kind of character, he'll want to show, you clumped me last time, I'll show you how good a player I am, and I'll get the better of you this time. I don't expect there to be any kind of physical confrontation or any nastiness like that, but I get the feeling you want to show.
Even at Michael Mellon's age, that was a bit extreme, unfortunately, in terms of the severity of his injury. But players are used to getting hit.
As a centre forward, he's going to take blows like that. Yeah. I mean, maybe not as severe as that, and hopefully not, but he is going to take blows into the back of the head, because that's what his job's to get up and win.
And as I've just said, he's Michael Mellon. One of the things, I think he's a very, very talented player, but one of the things I like about him is he always lets the defender know he's there. Mm-hmm. And that's football, and these guys know that. They appreciate that. So hopefully that's not... I'm sure Bear, after his couple of Diet Cokes, will be booing Liam Gordon every time he gets the ball. But
when he gets the ball, when he comes out the tunnel,
he'll be ejected in the warm-up.
We don't carry a grudge.
No, but it's that kind of thing. It's one for fans, but you tend to think players know it's part of the game, don't they?
I just think that looking at Michael Mellon as a whole, when he signed, you know, at the end of the transfer window, it was a good signing for Dundee, given the goals he'd scored, and he came in and showed instantly he had something to offer. Yeah. And for one reason or another, he scored at Celtic Park, a fantastic goal. But for one reason or another, he's not really had the game time you would have expected. Now, we've got, what we're looking at, nine games to the end of the season. Michael Mellon could play a huge part in Dundee's, you know, where they finish up this season.
He could propel them in the top six.
As George said, I think looking at him, he probably is the most accomplished finisher, even in the short space of time we've seen him. So if he can get on a goal streak, what a difference that could be where Dundee end up in the season.
I thought after that Livingston game he was going to be an absolute superstar. Yeah. Was it the Livy game? He came on and just looked on a different stratosphere from anyone else on the pitch.
He really did.
So, as you say, I mean, you can hardly legislate against what happened to him physically in the St Johnstone game. But even beyond that, it's just, you suspect there's something more there, because when you first caught eyes on him, what a signing he looks.
I think so. They've certainly got a big future in front of him. Hopefully it's a very near future from Dundee's point of view.
Aye. George, another very interesting thing that you came up with this week.
Doesn't sound like
you
me.
Were always born when I got to you. that was a joke, George. The Aaron Donnelly situation, Tony Docherty revealing that he suffered from Wolff-Parkinson-White syndrome.
There's a reason this was...
Are they the only other three people that ever had it?
There's a reason this story was interesting to you, because I didn't write it. It's...
I'd better put your byline.
It's an interesting one. Came back from international duty, I think, at the start of the year or so. Basically, he came back early from something back to Dundee, and they were doing heart scans of the squad, and they picked up this issue that he had, as you say, Wolff-Parkinson-White syndrome, and they needed an operation to sort an issue with his heart, which is obviously very scary.
Needed a dictionary to work out what it was.
Obviously a very scary situation for anybody, never mind a young footballer just starting out on a prospect of a really good career, but he's very, very quickly recovered from the operation and came right back in the team, and he's looked absolutely excellent since. So much so that Michael O'Neill called him up to the full Northern Ireland squad last week.
I thought you were going to say signed him for Aberdeen. Remember,
Controversial. Moved him up from the under-21s into the full squad. He didn't get on the pitch in their two games. But that experience would be fantastic for him going to the full squad and experiencing that coming back. And
coming back to Dens this week and smiling at all his Scottish teammates.
I think it's been more than smiling. I have to say he's been enjoying himself, I think, in front of his Scottish teammates. So he's been a really good signing, I think, from Dundee. He was kind of
standing, hasn't he? Yeah,
under the radar to begin with, I think. But
really has. Young man come in and got and took his chance. You're always wary when a young lad comes in, but he's never put a foot wrong, and he's been more in the team in recent months than out of it. But when he has come out and then suddenly been put back in, he's done his job magnificently. That's why I asked George about the contract possibilities there. But it looks like is it Nottingham Forest?
Yeah.
They're quite keen on him, but it's understandable because he looks the part.
They need
really
51
does.
Players, don't they?
Yeah, he really does. And I think it's a great learning experience for him to come in and play, first team games at this level. And the fact he's coped quite well, got to say, bodes well for his future.
Mm-hmm. And George, same area of the pitch. And this story you definitely wrote.
I didn't write this one, yeah.
How do you know? You're reading the notes.
It's still the one that's left on the notes.
Yeah, you've looked at Antonio Portales' impact and his chances of a late call-up to the Mexico squad for the Copa America. Now, I think he's been a great signing. It's a shame he's missed a few games through injury. But Mexico's a very, very big country. And if you're not a flyweight boxer, you're a footballer. So a lot of competition for places in their squad, isn't there?
Yeah, but I had a look at their squad they used for their Nations League, which they got to the final of over the weekend. And they only had... Well, initially, the manager called up 60 players to the squad, which seems remarkable.
Which is nothing in Mexico.
But he whittled that down, and they only had three centre-backs in the squad over the last week, and one of them only made his second cap. So... the most experienced ones have been struggling a bit in their clubs in Spain and Italy. Their names escape me as I'm speaking, but it feels like that position is one that they're kind of searching around for players to come in and help them in that position. So it might be late. It might, in terms of the Copa Americas this summer, and he's not been called up before, but I think there might be an opportunity.
It sounds to me, I remember another South American player coming to Dens, and his ultimate goal was to get back in a national side, and he did it. Not while he was at Dundee, I want to say, but he got a move from Dundee to Rangers, and his name was Claudio Canigio, obviously. Different.
I think he was known in his home.
It's a different scenario.
But, also, to be pedantic, when it came to that World Cup, he didn't get back in the side, he got on the bench and looked very bored for three games.
He got sent off, didn't he?
I think he did.
He did get sent off.
That was his only involvement.
Yeah. Portales himself says that the manager's aware of him and is keeping an eye on him. So that's certainly something he's going for, which is going to benefit Dundee, because if he's going to have any chance of the Mexico manager taking any notice of him, it means he's playing well for Dundee.
Playing out of skin, yeah.
There is that thing too, a bit like Scottish players move to England and their star shines more brightly in terms of publicity. For South Americans, traditionally, a move to Europe does get you some attention.
I think so. And he's certainly,
to be fair, he's a very good player.
I think he's been excellent. I mean, obviously, you mentioned the injuries. It's two kind of lengthy injuries that have really curtailed things. But when I've looked at all the games that he's played for Dundee, he has made a big impact. And clean sheets, I think they've been
he's
nine under him and three when he's not been in.
He's pride himself on a good hard tackle and a good block. You can see him taking.
Is he a better footballer than we gave him credit possibly. For from his video reel of flying tackles?
Yeah, possibly. No, he is, and in the system, the three at the back system suits him very well, because he isn't sluggish. He has got a bit of movement about him. He's got pace, but he enjoys defending, and that's a great trait to have for a defender, because a lot of them look like they can't be bothered some of the time, but he looks as though he really enjoys getting stuck in and getting tackles in. But there's more to that as well, Tom, as you've just pointed out, about his ability on the ball.
Mm-hmm. And he took penalties back in Mexico as well, which kind of speaks to the character. They can step up in big moments and do things for his team.
Shame I think he wasn't Welsh then, eh?
I think he'll...
See, now, if he'd been at Dens last season, he probably would have got an opportunity to take a penalty.
He might have been a top scorer.
Yeah, yeah, everybody was missing him, but Luke McKimmon's nailed that one down at this point in time. I hope I've not put the...
well, you've done it now, Bear. I know. Last minute penalty miss, I can see it coming. Heartache on Saturday. Good stuff, guys.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it. Or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people find Twa Teams One Street, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget to pick up your copy of the Tilly Monday to Saturday for all the latest from Dens and Tannadice, or go to thetilly.co.uk to find out how you can get the paper delivered right to your door.